Welcome to the Joe Customs Podcast.
There's just no limit to what you can have now in your collection.
So the first one of you guys that starts taking orders is going to take over the site.
Hey, if I find something good on clearance, I'm not leaving anything behind.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Joe Customs Podcast. John, a.k.a. P-Love, Joe Customs Administrator.
I'm Brad, TR101AL.
I'm Dan, the Spectre.
I'm Jeff, also known as Joe Mama.
Oh, wait, I used that one already.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Joe Michaels.
Hi, Joe Michaels. And our special guest tonight is Mark M. Say hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, this is Mark.
Hey, Mark M., what's your real name?
Mark Mitchell.
Oh.
Yeah, I was creative when I did a screen name.
So we have Mark on here because of his Doctor Who Dalek that he did with 3D image program and actually printed it out. And so we wanted to talk to him a little bit about that process. Now, he's just getting started, and we know that. So this is going to be part one. We don't know when part two is going to happen, but we just wanted to get how we got into it and some other questions we'll ask. So why don't you kick it off, Mark, and just tell us how you came about it and your experiences thus far.
Well, I've actually been interested in stuff like this for quite a while, and I started out with a MakerBot cupcake about 3 years ago, but it was a kit that I built myself, and it never did quite what I wanted it to do. And so when I found a new model out there that was a good price, I went for it. And I've always been interested in doing stuff like this because I always wanted to add stuff to what I have, you know, collection-wise, but then also in my non-collecting life, there's a lot of uses I can have for it, like in work and stuff. So it's just, it's one of those things where I've always wanted to be able to make things that I have in my head that you can't just easily fabricate other ways because of the materials needed and stuff like that. And so when I found a printer that would allow me to design up what I needed in software and then print right out, I snapped it up.
What's something you can do with a 3D printer that you probably couldn't do with just regular sculpting or, you know, simple modifications?
Get precise angles and stuff in a design program, and then I can duplicate that multiple times so that if I'm needing multiples of one piece, rather than having to sculpt it and then cast it and make a mold of it and then cast it, which is a burdensome process sometimes, I design it one time and then every printout is going to be the exact same. And so it gives me a lot of advantage there when it comes to that. Just as for instance, what actually piqued my interest with this is in my line of work, I'm starting up an internet service, and I needed a specific bracket to hold a piece of equipment to a wall that they don't make, and I don't need a lot of them, so it's not something I needed to send out to John for fabrication. So with this printer, I can easily print out the pieces when I need them, and I know it'll be the same piece every time.
Mark, I have a few questions for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
One, what is the entry price point into getting into what you're doing?
The entry price point, I'm going to assume you already have the computer, so I'm not going to count that. But just to get a printer and some plastic to start printing, you can get a printer now for about $500, actually $450, and then the plastic's going to run you usually about $15 to $40 per 1 to 2 pound roll, depending on what kind of plastic you're wanting. So all said and done, probably about $500, $550 will get you started.
Okay, second, what types of programs and or art, you know, I know there's 3D programs and everything like that. What's the knowledge that you need to have to get into this? What's the skill set to start this?
It really helps if you, especially if you're going for one of the entry-level printers, it helps to have a little bit of electrical know-how, electronics know-how, because they're not as ready to use out of the box as, say, you know, an HP printer, just regular desk jet printer or something. They do take a little tweaking to get them running, so you have to be comfortable with making modifications to electronics, not major modifications, but, you know, adjusting belts and tensioning pulleys and stuff. And then as far as the software, it helps if you're familiar with any kind of CAD program, that's computer-assisted design, if you know anything like that. But even if you've dealt with Photoshop or something along those lines, that will help you a lot, because the difference between drawing in 2D and 3D is just a matter of, you know, adding that third dimension once you've got the drawing going, because you can, for instance, if you get Google SketchUp, or actually it's not Google anymore, but if you get SketchUp, you can start by doing basic cubes, and you can actually build the shapes that you have together to make more complex items. So you can take a cube and a sphere and merge them together and get a more complex shape. So being comfortable with some kind of, any kind of design program, 2D or 3D, really helps a lot. That's the same principle you use in Photoshop or Illustrator or any of the 2D programs. It's just you're doing it in a 3D environment. So if you can picture in your head the 3D element, if you have any kind of imaging background, such as Illustrator, Photoshop, any of those programs, that will help you a lot into doing the 3D design.
Okay, my next question is, how comfortable or how happy are you with the resolution of your final print?
I'm still actually tweaking that some, but even with what I've done so far, I've been very happy with it, because the particular model I have can do a 0.1 millimeter resolution, which is a pretty fine resolution. You have to really be looking to see the striation that separates the layers, and there are techniques you can do to make the resolution a little bit better, such as using acetone to wash it or to let it sit in a container full of acetone vapor, and that will actually melt away some of that striation and give you a smoother surface.
I never thought about using acetone vapor before.
It's a good process. The big commercial 3D printers, that's what a lot of them do to get rid of the layer lines, is they all have a container where they put acetone in the bottom of the container, and acetone boils in a pretty low temperature. I think it's like 80, 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So you put the acetone down there with a heat source underneath it to get it to boil, and then it gives off the vapor. And then they'll have some kind of cooler above it to keep the acetone from coming out of the container, and then the part is just suspended in that container. And so that vapor gets it, and it just melts it without actually touching it, so you don't have the intense melting that you get with acetone otherwise.
Remember, kids, to do that in a well-ventilated area.
Yes.
How far away are we from every one of us having one of these?
To be able to just buy one and have it out of the box running and printing all the stuff you want to print, I'd say we're probably another 2 to 3 years away at least. But from having people be able to buy one just like they'd like to buy, you know, a regular printer or a laptop or something at Staples or Walmart, Best Buy, or whatever, I could see that starting to happen within the next year or so, because they're making big strides in that. Places like Staples are actually talking about having 3D printers in store where you can take in a design and they print it out and then you just pick it up, kind of like you do with pictures right now at Walmart or wherever.
I don't know if you saw on the board, but Raptor brought up this thing last week about how there's a place in New York City that's like a photo booth, only it's a 3D scanning booth, and you step in and for $5 they scan your head. And then for, I think it was a three-tiered pricing thing, they will send you a scale model in plastic of your head. So it was like 20, 40, 60, and I assume it was for 118, 1/6, and I don't know, 1/8. to get a copy of your head. Do you think that anybody's going to take on that, or you think we're just going to bypass that and just start doing it at home?
I think people will start doing it at home because with things like the Xbox Kinect or the, actually the Windows Kinect now, you can set up that kind of scanning at home yourself. And the scanning is even easier than the printing is because the scanning software does all the work for you. If you set up the scanning station, then all you have to do is scan. And it's a, I'm actually working on setting that up myself right now so I can scan some stuff into print. And you can buy, ASUS makes their version of it. It's called the ProLive Exeon. It's $150. And you get their version of the Kinect. And then there's tons of software out there you can use, both free and pay software, that does a very good job of scanning in images as long as you turn it at a set pace. And that's really easy to do, especially if you come up with a lazy Susan or something where you can turn it. And to do that on a larger scale like a person, it's just a matter of, you know, getting the camera farther away from the item being scanned. And I've actually done some test scans with it, and I've gotten about three quarters of a person scanned in really well. And, you know, it's, that's just with trying it a couple of times. So I think people will be doing that kind of thing at home rather than going someplace to have it done. I can see people maybe doing the scanning at home and then taking that scanned image and having that printed somewhere rather than having the printer themselves. But the scanning itself, I think the phones and stuff will be doing that before too long.
Yeah, I agree. I think the phones and stuff will catch up, but I think people will be going to Walmart and Staples and Michaels, places like that, that kind of cater to the hobby or, you know, the same kind of people that do copies of paper or copies for photos and stuff. You'd still go to those outlets, but they'd have some kind of plastic printer set up for these kind of projects.
Yeah, and that's the way it's going to go because at home, a home printer is kind of like the home casters. You know, there are guys out there that do a really good job of making molds and casting from them, but that's not for everybody. And the printer will be kind of like that for, like I said, at least 2 or 3 years, if not a little bit longer. But I see stores offering that service, and the higher-end printers, where there's a high entry level to get to the printer, but there's a lot of money to be made from mass production with it, you can do multiple colors and stuff like that, so people can, you know, they can take something in and print it out and have it print out in almost the full color that they want it in. Whereas at home, you're still limited to one, maybe two colors when you print.
So I've got two last things I want to say about this. First of all, I was really excited earlier, maybe about a month ago, when the 3D Doodler came into Kickstarter. And that's the, you know, the 3D printer in a hot glue or a hot gun pen. They went live with their Kickstarter. They wanted $30,000, and they made, well, let's put it this way, they've got 27 hours left in their Kickstarters, in their Kickstarter thing, and they've made $2.3 million. They've got 26,215 backers right now. So within a month, they've just exploded this. And I think all that, you know, I think that just speaks to the fact that everybody is interested, or there are at least 26,000 people interested in this that are willing to put up $50 or $100 just to get something in hand. And yeah. I think that's really exciting. And I think what's more exciting than this print in the air pen or print on the, you know, template pen is you're going to see a lot of companies seeing how much money and how fast this went, and they're going to start making those HP printers with the 3D capabilities, accessible under $500, very professional finishes. My final thought on this is that where we once see these cease and desist letters, Pete Love, maybe you can help me out here, but what was the website that was shut down by Hasbro for casting heads?
Jane R Designs. Yeah, well, all the sites at that time got cease and desist letters. If you had anything that resembled the G.I. Joe logo, the bars and stripes, the star, and you were selling product related to G.I. Joe, like Beav even got one for the Joe Customs logo we had at the time, and he was selling shirts out of the Zazzle store that's attached to the website. And so he got one. Other sites got one. I know a lot of websites got it, and that's why you saw a lot of those sites move away from it. Now, obviously, Hasbro's taken a step back, but they still do actively, you know, go after people who try to sell anything related to G.I. Joe. Just ask Alyosha. He's got, like, a notebook full of cease and desist letters.
Okay, so here's my next question is, if anybody at home can take their Kinect and scan in their Joe and then turn around and print their Joe, what's Hasbro going to do then? I guess I don't know what the question is here.
You know what? I know what your question is. So let me just answer your question. It's going to be probably twofold. One, Hasbro doesn't really have like a likeness or any kind of thing like that. It's a copyright on the character name. So if you start using the copyright or trademark character names and information, they can't go after you if a head sculpt looks like something. But if you're taking a direct copy of it and naming it exactly, you know, Iceberg Head is Iceberg on your website and selling it under your G.I. Joe, you know, portion of your selling site, that's when they're going to go after you. That's when they're going to find you. That's when they're going to see that you're selling G.I. Joe related items. But I think what we might see in the industry as a whole is something more related to what we see with CDs and DVDs and even tape cassettes back in the day, is that a portion of every sale went back into the industry because they knew that's exactly what this would be used for, to get around copyright. So we might see that for every spool of plastic or whatever that gets sold, that a portion of that goes back in to the manufacturing industry somehow.
Well, I think as long as people use it for their own personal uses, not to actually sell copies, I don't think Hasbro really would have much of a problem with that.
Well, yeah, there'd be no way to really see it, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like making a custom for yourself is fine, but you start packaging it and putting it up on eBay or on your own website for sale, somebody might realize, oh, you're selling a G.I. Joe product.
Exactly. But if I wanted to scan, say, you know, a head that I needed six of to build a custom squad, and it was just strictly for me, I don't think Hasbro would care too much.
Mark, I had a question for you.
Okay.
You've done traditional customizing, and now you've gone into the 3D digital print customs. Which one do you think, you know, is there a way to even compare them, or are they just two totally different things at this point right now?
Well, I see the 3D printing as kind of just another tool in the general customizing, because whereas before I had to find pieces that worked, and I might find a piece that it worked okay, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted. Now I can actually make a piece that is exactly what I want to do the thing I want to do. Even done sculpting in the past, and I wasn't happy with a lot of my sculpting, and I just didn't get it to be exactly what I wanted it to be. And as mostly when I was wanting something where I needed something to be exactly round or a flat surface, and it's really hard to do that in sculpting. And a lot of you guys know that because you've done it. And I'm not that good when it comes to that. I can do organic stuff, but I'm not good at doing mechanical-type sculpting. And with this, that just gives me another tool in my toolbox, basically. Now I can sculpt something if it's something I'm good at sculpting. But if it's something where I need it to be precise, like a helmet or something like that, now I've got the means of sculpting that, let's say, just on the computer and then letting the machine do the actual printing of it for me.
Could you compare the quality of the prints to, say, a resin cast or what you get at retail, like, say, a factory head or factory body? How does it compare as far as the quality and the feel and the weight and the texture and everything?
The texture, the weight, and all that's going to be closer to factory because the plastic's actually ABS plastic, which some of the plastic used in it's ABS, some of it's PVC. So depending on the part, the ABS plastic's the same plastic that would be in the actual figure. As far as the resolution and quality, part of that's going to be in how precise you design the item when you design it, and part of it's going to be, again, it goes back to that 0.1 millimeter resolution, how noticeable is that to the average person? Most people, when they see something that's printed at that resolution, they don't really notice the striation in it until they really get to looking at it. But with us in the customizing world, we're used to looking at stuff, trying to critique it like that. So the average customizer will probably see that striation and say, oh, well, you know, that's not quite as good as a resin cast. But in some aspects, it will be closer to the factory than the resin can ever be. In other ways, the resin's going to be a little more there, unless you work the print a little bit.
I know you're just getting started on this. So what really surprised you while working with this medium to create stuff? Like, what was the one thing you didn't anticipate when you kind of dove into it?
Well, I guess one of the things is you don't realize how much the temperature around you varies when you're, you know, when it's just you walking in the room or something. But these printers are so sensitive to temperature changes that if you don't have a case on it, you can have something printing up, and even just a breeze from somebody opening a door can cool plastic enough that it doesn't bond, and then you go from having this piece being built up layer by layer to a big wad of plastic just coming out of the printer at random because it doesn't have anything to bind to. And I actually had that happen with the first Dalek I tried to print. I didn't have a case on the printer because I wanted to be able to access it. You know, it's still a hands-on type thing, so I didn't have any casing around it. And it was printing, and I walked away, and I come back, and I've got about a half inch of Dalek, and then I have just this big spaghetti wad of plastic where it's just happily trying to print, but it's not binding to anything. And I found out later that it was because without a case around it, it had cooled off that much that quickly that the plastic just wouldn't bind to itself, and that happened. And that's actually a fairly common thing with people when they're starting out. And it's just one of those things you don't think about because, you know, you think your house is consistently temperature and all that, but it's just those little minor variations that we don't even think about really affect this kind of thing.
That's interesting and a good thing to know because I wouldn't even have thought of that either.
Yeah, it just really surprised me because when I ordered the printer, that was an option, was to get a case to go with it. And I thought, oh, I don't really need the case. And then I was reading a message board about it, and it was suggested to, you know, make a case if you didn't get one. And so I actually just bought some acrylic sheets and put them around it and used magnets to hold them on so I can still take them off quickly and easily. But it's one of the first things that nearly everybody runs into whenever they get one of these is they don't have that case on there, and the cooling effect of just air moving, convection just really doesn't print in if you're not careful.
Yeah, I probably would have beat that printer with a hammer.
Hey, Mark, I got a question for you real quick.
Okay.
When are you sending me one of those Daleks?
Print another one out, I could.
Yeah. No, they look fantastic already. They had such a fantastic start to that project, even with the little striations in it, that I can't wait to see how it looks when you get one finally all done with the arms added on and all painted up and everything.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing is I've actually put the Dalek on kind of hold because I'm doing smaller things to fine-tune it with, because the one thing with printing, and this is why I think it'll be a while before everybody has one, is it is a slow process. Printing just that little head that I posted took about an hour, and printing the Dalek was about a, if I remember correctly, 5 or 6 hour job.
Hmm.
So I've been fine-tuning the printer with small prints, and then I'll go back to doing Daleks and stuff like that whenever I actually get all the settings tied down that I want.
I just realized something. Dan and I were both like, wow, that's a long time for printing. But if you compare it to how long it would take you to sculpt it, create a mold for it, and then start casting it, that would take a couple of days. So in comparison, 5 hours is a snap.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, the 5 hours, it's all printer time. You're free to do whatever you want. You know, while it's printing, I can go do something else. I can paint on something else, or I can spend some time with the kids or whatever, and it's still doing its thing, and I'm working on a custom, just not as actively.
Well, I would say this is that, you know, we've got, what, 10 or so casters, you know, associated with the site right now, but we have zero 3D printers associated with the site right now. Well, actually, I take that back. We've got you and we've got, what's that other guy's name?
Lieutenant Falcon, LT Falcon.
So the first one of you guys that starts taking orders is going to take over the site.
I probably have to yield to him on that because he does design by trade. I mean, that is his bread and butter, so he's got such a head start on me in that if he ever decides to do it, he would run the site. He does fantastic work, though.
Sure does.
And in fact, that's one of the things that's exciting about this being able to do a printer like this, he designed that MSV, and he sent me his design files. So now I can print one out for myself, and I can have one that looks exactly like his. So, in effect, he made a custom, and then he was able to share that custom with other people, and not the actual custom, but the process of making it, so that I can have one or two or ten or however many I want of that exact custom that he did.
Wow. You realize that what you're talking about is a new gallery at Joe Customs, and it's just going to be a gallery of files.
Something like the file repository, but just for 3D image files. But, I mean, essentially, in traditional customizing terms, he sent you not just his parts recipe, but the mold to cast those parts, too.
Exactly. He sent me, they're called STL files, and they're kind of machine language files that the 3D imaging programs can understand. And so they tell it everything to do. And so then I run that through the software for the printer, and it comes out just like what he has. And there actually are repositories out there right now, such as MakerBot has the Thingiverse, where people design stuff and they put them out there for other people to download. The problem with it is a lot of those sites, they're so massive and there's so many people with so many interests putting stuff out there that it's almost impossible to find, you know, that one thing you're wanting. So the thought of having, for instance, at Joe Customs, a repository where you know it's just going to be G.I. Joe related files, I think that's a great idea down the road as more people get into it. And I do think a lot of people will start getting into this as the prices on the printers continue to get better and people will start doing more design work.
Had you ever used a store like Shapeways or something like that before? Or did you know
no,
right
No, I'd off? Never used Shapeways. I hadn't used that. I'd looked at it, but the cost of their stuff, I knew for a matter of fact, like I said, I've had the other printer before that just wasn't quite the quality I wanted, but I knew what it cost me to use it. I knew what it cost to make the stuff. And so while Shapeways printers were better, I knew they weren't that much better to pay the price that they charge.
Mark, I got a question about the actual plastics. You said you get them in spools. Do they have any kind of unusual specialty plastics, like glow-in-the-dark or transparent colors, anything like that? Or is it just solid, like solid gray or whatever?
I actually have a spool of blue glow-in-the-dark right now. That it's blue in light and it glows blue, but you can get different colors of glow-in-the-dark. And one that I don't have yet, because I just found out about it the other day, but they make thermal reactive and light reactive plastics. So, for instance, remember Zartan and the Chameleon, how they change color in the sunlight?
Yes. Yeah.
They make plastic that does that for the printers, and it'll be white when it's not in UV light, and you expose it to UV light, and it turns purple. And
oh,
so, yeah, they actually have plastics out there for almost any need. You can get the glow-in-the-dark, you can get the UV reactive, you can get heat reactive.
So what you're saying is that you need a Zartan Chameleon STL file. You need us to get you that. I hear you.
yes, exactly. And that's actually something I've been thinking about because when I was a kid, it was a gimmicky toy, but that was one of my favorite toys. And, you know, to be able to recreate that just would be amazing, I think. And not just recreate it in look, but actually in function and everything.
Yeah, that adds a whole bunch of new tools to the arsenal. That's actually very cool that you can have different types of plastics like that.
If you hear a large silence, it's just me taking note, writing this all down. I'm putting together my Christmas wish list.
This is one of those things that can be dangerous to get into because once you get into it, you start seeing all the other stuff you want to go on with it, such as setting up the 3D scanner and the different colors of plastic, the different types of plastic. So it can add up, but you know that's the same with any hobby.
Welcome to customizing.
Hey, Mark, have you looked into any of those Autodesk free programs?
Yes, I've used them. They're actually pretty good programs. The one that I'm most interested in, but I haven't actually played with much, is the, I forget what it's called now, it's the one where you can actually take a series of pictures and you upload it to it, and it will convert those pictures into a 3D file based on, you know, for instance, take maybe 20 pictures of an item from different sides, you know, go all the way around it. And it can piece that into a 3D file.
Since Autodesk is one of the premier 3D professional, you know, at least in the video industry world, 3D modeling programs, why do you think that they're giving their stuff away for free?
Because of the expense of their programs, when you get into the professional stuff, that's such an expensive package, because if you look at, I can't think of the name of it now, their CAD program, it's hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars, depending on which version of it you need. Well, the average person isn't going to buy into that. But if they give them this basic functionality program for free, people will use it and they'll familiarize themselves with it. And then they might say, you know, if I'm going to do this for a living, or if I'm going to do this, make money at it, maybe I need a full-featured package, and then they'll look at buying the actual package from Autodesk. It's kind of a way of giving somebody, you know, a trial version of it, or you know, if you remember how shareware used to be, it's kind of like doing that, just in a friendlier way for the end user.
Schoolyard crack dealer. That's what
I'm thinking, too. It's a way, I think Autodesk, looking at the long con here, I think they're looking at the fact that everybody's going to have their little homegrown HD printer or, you know, something to make supper in, and they're all going to need a 3D program or something like that to do it. And I think Autodesk is looking that far out and saying, you know what, if we can get it in everybody's hands now, when we start releasing the printers, everyone will know how to use our product, and we'll have an end.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. If you look at the ones they offer right now online, such as the Create and the Creature Maker and all that, they offer you the ability to make that item, but then they also try to push you into using one of the print services that they partner with. So even there, they just want to make sure you realize that you can design this with us, and you can print it out, but these aren't our full-fledged software. This isn't giving you all the capability. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's kind of where they're trying to go with it.
Mark, did you say you are not taking commissions?
Not right now. I'd like to get a little more experience at it so that you don't wind up with a head that's half-smushed or something. No, I'm not taking commissions yet, but I do hope to in the near future.
All right. Hey, Mark, are you buying one of those 3D doodlers or not?
You know, I'm still up on the fence on that one because it looked interesting, but at the same time, I wasn't sure how good I would be with it. But it's one of those things I'm really thinking about it because the more I think about it, I think it'd be good, if not as a doodler, as a sort of a plastic welder to weld stuff together. So I'm thinking I probably will.
Okay, so they say that that's only one of their products. Do you think, and I don't know, Mark, do you have a Dremel?
Yes, I do.
Do you have a router attachment for your Dremel?
Yes, I do.
Do you think that maybe these people that are putting this 3D doodler together are creating a doodler attachment for their Dremel that will make it a 3D printer?
You know, that's actually something I hadn't thought of, but that really wouldn't take a whole lot to do. The automated part of it's where you get into the expense of it, because what they've done for the doodler is they've taken the print head that's used in printers such as mine and just put it in a self-enclosed casing so that you can hold it. And the actual magic happens with the CNC part of it, the computer-controlled part of it, because you've got stepper motors that the computer is constantly moving precisely where they need to move. So I could see that happening, but I don't see it being something that's going to cost you less than at least $200-$300, but still, if you spent $300 for that table and then another $50 for the printer, that's still a $350 3D printer, so that could be possible. And I do see a lot of people buying the doodler and hacking it to build their own printer at home, because while the computer control part of it is the hard part or the expensive part as far as the actual building of it, the print head is the hard part if you're trying to build one from scratch. So if you could get a print head that was already completely built and you just need to put it to the motors and table, that'd be a good compromise, I think.
Well, I'm calling it now. In other words, I think that's one of their behind the scenes on this thing. And if they're not, then all of the companies that could be making these are looking at this 3D doodler and saying, all right, look, we could make a bank right here with this stuff.
Oh, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I do see that happening. It was honestly not something I thought of when I saw the doodler, but after you said that, it just makes too much sense for them not to do it or somebody not to do it.
Well, Mark, thank you for your expertise and thanks for your time tonight. This makes me really excited. And actually, this I think this is our next horizon in the hobby, is that it's you're not just going to be putting your parts list out there. You're actually going to be putting these files out there. People will be building other people's customs from the ground up, and it will kill the customizing hobby as far as eBay is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, a year or two ago, we were talking about how this was on the horizon. Mark M. and Lieutenant and Shaveways, they're here. It's here now. It's just not in the homes yet, but it will be.
Yeah, and it's just going to get better and better. I mean, one thing we see on the website all the time, people asking, I want G.I. Joe scale Transformers. Well, that's not feasible for Hasbro to do, but for the third-party markets to do, that's possible now, because it might not be something that they sell you, but they can sell you the files for it or something like that, and then you print your own out and put it together. Or you design your own. And, I mean, there have been fantastic Joe Scale customs out there of Transformers, but you can actually print your own now that transforms and everything if you have the time and patience and skill to design it. The ambition that's out there is just going to be even more, because, I mean, there's some fantastic guys out there now doing customs. And when they have this tool in their toolbox as well as the other stuff they have, the sky's going to be the limit on what we see. It's going to be where you see stuff that looks so production that it's going to be hard to tell it wasn't.
I don't even know what to say about that.
I didn't even think about that. That's a fantastic idea.
I want to go to that heaven.
I want to kickstart this.
It's going to happen. I mean, it's just, there's no way it's not. And the companies can't do anything to stop it, because, you know, the genie's kind of out of the bottle with it. They, you know, and like we were talking earlier, when we were talking about the custom casting and all that, with this, they can't really stop the files from being transferred and everything. They can slow it down, but they can't really stop it. The only way they can compete is to add more interactive capabilities to the toys and stuff like that. But when it's just a raw toy, we can do anything now at home. We've got the capability. And so
you
print stuff out, and you can keep on printing them, or you can make a mold off what you printed if you want and cast it that way. There's just no limit to what you can have now in your collection.
We're gonna move on to the other segments. Are you going to stick around, or do you have to go out?
I need to drop off if I can.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Again, we can't wait to have you back on again to let us know what else you found out and see all the other projects you have in store.
Oh, I look forward to it. It's been fun.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I got a massive right now.
Oh. I feel like I need to go back to college.
I know. I've already told my wife, when, like, you know, robotics kind of like came out and there were all those robot shows, that I really need to go back to high school and kick the crap out of my guidance counselor.
Wow, that fell flat.
Oh, yeah, that's going to get cut. Don't worry.
Why is it always cut when it's your bad joke? Hey, I got a question for you guys. When you're working with your sculpting material, like, for instance, the Aves two-part,
yep,
and it's not quite sticking to your source material, do you, like, super glue it down just to get something that's sticking?
I've only had... Okay, it's a two-part answer. If it's really small, if I'm trying to do, like, a little badge or belt buckle, I have a lot of trouble because the tool keeps picking it off, whatever I'm trying to sculpt it onto, especially if there isn't a nice clean edge for it to bond around. When that happens, I actually sculpt it separately. You know, I'll put it on a flat piece of styrene or something and sculpt it by itself and then glue it onto the figure itself. It's that oily plastic of the figure I have the most problems with.
Okay, so for instance, if I'm trying to sculpt some Catwoman ears or whatever, like some classic Catwoman from the Batman show, so I'm trying to sculpt on top of some, you know, 25th anniversary hair, and it just, I keep lifting it off, you know, either that or I'm using water and the water is just like dissolving the sculpt. How do you deal with it at that point?
Have you tried sanding the hair first, just a little bit in the places where you're going to add the green stuff?
Just to give it some bite?
Details on the chest, and it didn't want to stick. I would just sand it lightly, and it seemed like it had something to grip to.
All right, that's what I'm going to do next.
Hey, you guys there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, it just fell off.
Where the hell have you been?
Hey, John, where do you get that big thing of babies from?
I ordered it I take that back. It's when I lived in San Francisco. There was a hobby store near me that I went to. I specifically didn't want to order it. So I went and got in person so I could do it. Don't order it. Don't do that. Those hobby stores have that stuff sitting around forever. Like, the top layer of mine was all, like, dried up. So you can order it online.
Okay. Because I'm only finding, like, you know, 6-inch or 12-inch little strings and that. And you can go through that really quick.
Oh, yeah. Mine's...
Brad, once upon a time, Doc Rob, like, put a link on the site. And I think it's in that customizing link, in general customizing, about where you can get, like, a 15-inch roll of that green stuff.
All right, cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, neat type.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say this right now. I was a big fan of green stuff until I found this Abe's Fix-It sculpt.
I like them both for different reasons, actually. Green stuff has more give. It just has it. But I came from Sculpey. You know, that's what I first started sculpting with. So that's what I know, that working with clay. And that's what... Fix-It and Abe's Magisculpt, they're both very similar that way, that they feel a lot like clay, unless you get them super wet, and then it's almost like working with plaster. And you don't get either of those textures when working with green stuff.
Yeah, now, another weird question, is it more like, I like Sculpey 2, but all I can find anymore is Sculpey 3. It seems like it tears apart too quickly, and... Is it like that, or is it a little bit more consistent like a Sculpey 2?
When you're sculpting, it's a little bit more like Sculpey 2. It's firmer. Well, depending on how much water you use to keep it wet or whatever. But it's nothing like knee tight, and it's not... If you use, like, Fimo or whatever, it's better than that. It's definitely... But it's not as, like, gumball-y. You know, like bubble gummy as knee tight is. If you've never used it, I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. So let's get into the awesome customs that we've seen recently.
Outstanding! Best of the best of the best, sir. With honor.
I gave it a ten.
Woo!
I'll just start the. Obviously, since we talked to Mark, I want to talk about that Lieutenant Falcon, his adventure team mission vehicle that he did with a 3D printer or sent away or whatever for somebody else to 3D print his design. That thing was just amazing. And I'm on a big adventure team kick. I love seeing those customs. Chief stuff been blowing me away. And now, all of a sudden, we've got a guy going, hey, remember that 12-inch vehicle? Well, I can do it in 1/18 scale now, too. Take that. What do you got?
I think that's a beautiful project. It came out so nice. The only improvement I think they can make would be a way to, on the curved windshield, you can see way too much of the striation from the printing. If that had been sanded smooth, that thing would have been a 10 out of 10. As it is, it's a 9.99 out of 10. But if they had smoothed it down... 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that would have taken, you know, the acetone vapors like Mark was talking about to kind of smooth that out before you paint. But as far as like a reproduction piece, I'm just flat out amazed. I've seen a lot of people attempt it or whatever, but it's taking G.I. Joe vehicles and just kind of getting the idea of it. He made a replication downsized. It's amazing.
You realize this is just the first, right? I think what we saw in this last month is the future of where this is going.
Oh, yeah, very, very possible.
So what customs have you guys seen that just blew you away?
My favorite one was from, I think his name is Dr. Robert Strange. His Spider-Man is amazing looking. It looks almost like a real-world take on what the Spider-Man costume would look like if it was like bike leathers as opposed to spandex. And it looks incredible. I could see somebody cosplaying this costume at a convention. It's just amazing looking. That's my favorite thing I've seen outside the Adventure Team vehicle.
Yeah, I was talking with Killcar Sputnik and Jeff yesterday after he posted it. It's like he did it as a period piece, kind of like a World War II thing. And I was like, no, that costume could work today. I could see that in, because essentially it's just real world clothing, and he took the webbing design off of it. I'm like, that could work. That Spider-Man costume could work in a Spider-Man comic today.
Oh, very much. It actually almost has like an Alex Ross quality to it, like especially in the shape of the head.
Yeah.
And the pose that he used. I can see Alex Ross painting that image on the cover of a Spider-Man comic.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Okay, yes. Cool. It keeps fading in and out, and just bear with me.
So what do you think of that Spider-Man?
I think it's pretty awesome. Like Dan said, it does have the leather feel to it. It definitely could be real world, or like today, Spider-Man version.
I was just going to say that I know that Spectre brought up Dr. Robert Strange is one of his favorite customizers that came to the site last year when we were doing the JCA thing. And I tell you what, I'm going to have to back Dan on this. And I think that we're going to see a lot. I'm hoping that we see a lot of cool stuff out of this guy, you know, over the course of the year and from here on out. Because I'm loving this stuff. I love the period pieces. I love the texture. I love the noir, all of that kind of stuff. I think you know, he's got it going on. He reminds me of Glorbs or the other dude from Foosh who does all of that, you know, 1940 Star Wars stuff. I think this is really cool.
Oh, Psylof, yeah.
Yeah, Psylof.
Psylof, thank you. That's the guy I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
and we'll say like this. I like seeing Zombie Guide, and I know I'm going to sound like I'm playing favorites or whatever, but I liked Zombie Guide's ARAH stuff that he's posted recently. It's nice to see that. It's nice to see him still using his old techniques and his old palettes and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, he's straight up repainting 82, 83 Joes. And it's just fun to see that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, like that Ninja Master would use the Major Blood head just in a different way that from the direct to consumer head.
Are you
head.
Still talking or did you cut out?
I kind of like verped, so.
Are you sure that's water you have next to you?
Yeah. Where he used that Major Blood head, the direct to consumer head, and he used that on the Ninja Body, and it just kind of gave a different take for a different character who wasn't Major Blood. And NFC liked it so much, he went off and took that concept and made a modern version of it. So you see that. Even though it's just a repaint. Well, it's a repaint that actually a lot of people look at and going, whoa, that's really cool, because the technique is solid. And sparkly clutch. Sparkly clutch.
Sparkly, yeah. See, the problem with Zombie Guide is he doesn't do enough, and so therefore he doesn't get any attention, any credit. You know, he has like these spurts about 7-8 years apart.
Iron Will, his Young Justice custom, he did the Apache Chief using that clear human body for the spiritual plane growth from the cartoon. And then his recent Static Shock, which actually had the Static Shock figure, which was a cool figure, but what the play feature he had was him riding the sewer grate or sewer manhole cover over this electricity, and the electricity thing from Star Wars was actually what was holding him up. That was just amazing. To capture not just the figures, the design from the cartoon, but their superpowers so perfectly.
Yeah, those are some of my favorites, too. I like those.
I really enjoyed Liv Evil's Cobra Blue Beret Commandos. When you start looking at the action shots, if you didn't know better, you'd swear it was a 12-inch, by the way the details were painted on the face.
I really like the work around the eyes and the skin tone and everything. Very, very nice.
Yeah, it's like the second or third picture down, and the way he's got the figure posed. If you didn't see the arm rivet there, you'd swear from distance it was a 12-inch.
Yeah, that was from that Project RAAH that never happened. Man, holy crap, that looks good. Oh, yeah, that second picture. Whew, that is a solid-looking figure.
And it really looks like it could have been a product that Hasbro would have done back in the late 80s. It really captures that whole RAAH feel. Very well done.
And he's got some flawless paint.
Oh, he always does. Liv Evil always had incredible brush control and almost like factory paint. It's very smooth.
I think it's better than factory paint. I mean, the detailing is just amazing.
What was that? What's going on?
Oh, I'm trying to sculpt, and I'm just pissed me off.
Hey, I'm right there with you. I can't sculpt worth a damn.
Well, I didn't listen to Brad, and so I'm sculpting on a head that doesn't have anything for the stuff to grab on, so it just keeps falling off. It's just really annoying. And I'm not trying to not be a part of this, but I'm so damn close to being done.
Don't explain it to us. Just apologize to the audience.
Well, the audience doesn't care what I say.
The other two I really liked was Steve. He put up that adventure team, his two, the commander, and then, but the Hannibal Smith from the A-Team he did. I thought that was really good. And then,
oh, those are very sharp.
Man, just,
I knew that was Hannibal just looking at it before I even read the bio, and I was like, oh, wow, Hannibal.
Right, exactly. I was like, oh, that kind of looks like Hannibal, and oh, sure enough, that's who he intended to be. It's perfect custom. And then T.R. Warner, never know how to say it, he did his desert gravedigger, and, you know, it was based on his previous gravedigger that he already did, but, again, just a cool-looking figure, and he used some racing graphics from his hobby store for those Pinewood Derby things and put it on the shield, and it, no wrinkles, no creases, no nothing. Perfect.
Yeah, that is a very, very clean decal transfer. That looks really good.
And then last one on my list. Shoot, I can't remember his name. It's horrible. Give me a second to find it. He posted it Friday.
Are you talking about the Zero Dark 30 Navy?
Yes, yes, yay! Thank you.
How you like me now?
Whoa.
That new guy, he'll be Shinobi, I think.
He's been around, but yeah, that, wow. I didn't say a name, I didn't even say what it was. That's how connected we are, people. That's how connected we are.
I know you, P-Love.
Oh, man. He did, that figure looked like it stepped right out of the movie, and I haven't even seen the movie. It was one of those things I looked at. I was like, oh, wow, they make helmets with four night scopes? Four? And so I looked at some of the screen captures and some of the trailer and stuff, and, man, that figure, perfect camo, perfect helmet that he sculpted on there. Just the weapon looked dead on, all around, perfection. My favorite figure of this time. Did I mention it was awesome?
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
I like what Dusty79 did with his clutch, taking the head from that figure that didn't move very well and transplanting it onto a body that does, and then actually making it look like it's supposed to be clutch.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That was actually very cool. And it looks almost like a redo of the second version of clutch, the one that came with the Vamp Mark II. So that, you know, kudos to that as well.
Yeah, I've seen a similar recipe on, I think it was the Terror Drone, where somebody had done something similar with it and made a version 2 Rock and Roll. And it turned out pretty good as well. So the head's versatile on you know, so many different levels. I realized that if I put a baseball cap on, just saying.
Any other customs stand out to you guys?
What got loaded to the site this week that we like that never made it through the critique forum?
Ice Cream Man did that for Bush, man. I'm the one who actually approved that one through. It's based on just an obscure comic book character. It's not a fantastic custom in that, you know, it'll probably blow you away when you look at it. But it was just one of those customs. I have this whole, like, imaginary list of customs I never think I'm going to see. And somebody always surprises me with something. A lot of the times it's the Spectre, but... And then Count Chocula too. So Jeff gets him in there too. But that character, never thought I'd see a custom of him. Never.
I don't recognize it. What is it? It's an independent comic book. Is that what it is?
No, it's from Marvel. They had this humor comic called Not Brand Heck, spelled ECHH, something like that. He was kind of like the mascot of the book.
Ah, sorry.
Yeah, he was kind of like an Alfred E. Newman. Kind of goofy superhero character that they kind of had in Marvel, and yeah, you just, it's something you just wouldn't expect to see anywhere.
Love those.
Exactly.
I'm glad somebody else does them and that somebody else recognizes them, because maybe I'm just getting too old.
What a lot of people don't realize about Four Bushmen, though, his costume is actually a copy of a DC character from the 30s and 40s. There was a woman, a female, kind of like a sidekick to the Justice Society, named Ma Hunkel, and she would dress up as a character called the Red Tornado. And this was prior to the cyborg that had the tornado powers. She basically wore the same thing, a red boiler suit with a big pot on top of her head. And Four Bushmen just follows that same design.
And you need to push your glasses up on your nose now.
Why do I get a feeling that there's going to be a Spectreverse version of the Four Bushmen?
Probably not. I never actually thought of doing that guy, but maybe someday down the road.
So let's get right into it. What are you guys working on? The customizing workbench. Workbench.
Well, I'm working on, you probably saw my goblins I put up over the last week. I've actually begun work on the companion orcs to go with them. I picked up 24, I'm sorry, of those, the Fimbul the Hunter and the Warg sets for like $5 each at Kmart. And I'm getting rid of a lot of the wargs, so if anybody wants wargs, they'll be in my swap shop probably on Saturday. But I've got all these Fimbuls, and I've got all different armor combinations, and just like with my goblins, where I created a whole bunch of custom web gear for them, I'm doing the same thing for the orcs as well. So I'm kind of tying in the medieval fantasy look into my Star Wars universe. So that's kind of what I'm working on right now. I've been having a lot of fun doing that.
24 times 5, carry the 0. Holy crap, man.
Hey, if I find something good on clearance, I'm not leaving anything behind. I cleared out my Kmarts of all the goblins. I actually had one more idea for another goblin, and there's no more goblins, like in North Jersey. One of my friends in PA found one. He's mailing it to me. I should have it on Monday.
You're clearing out the tri-state area, man.
So I'm sorry out there to, Keenan and the other guys who are local. Yeah, I took them all. I apologize. Also, today, I don't know if you guys saw on the site, I found those Jurassic Joes, the Toys R Us exclusives. They're out. Those figures people were paying hundreds of bucks for on eBay. I picked them up today for the Russ. I got the one that has the burnout head and the one that looks like an adventure team member.
The Archer, yeah.
Yeah, the dinosaurs are just beautiful. They are really well articulated for Jurassic Park toys, which normally have, like, you know, 4 points of articulation and that's it. These are actually really nice. And the figures, despite using older 25th anniversary and, that era parts, actually flow pretty nicely.
So the Archer, you actually like that?
The Archer's not bad. The only thing is he's a little cartoony looking from the neck down because he uses that gung-ho sculpt.
Yeah.
But the head, I can't identify who the head is. I know people are saying it's Mercer, but doesn't Mercer have earrings?
No, Red Dog. Red Dog.
Oh, Red Dog. Okay, that's who it is. Yeah. That face is a little more realistic than the body it sits on, so you kind of get this little bit of a weird effect. But the colors, the way it all flows together, actually look very nice. They look like a toy that belongs in the Jurassic Park line, because the Jurassic Park line always had a little more cartoony proportions and detailing, so it works pretty well.
That package, that's one of those things where I was like, actually, I wanted to get it, because the initial prototype that we saw had the Adventure Team logo on it, had the club's Adventure Team head, and I was like, oh, you know, I told you, I'm on that Adventure Team kick. So I saw it, and I was like, that'd be cool. And then when they changed it to Red Dog, I kind of backed off a little. And then I saw it online, and I almost bought it. And then I'm like, wait a minute, that's an old gung-ho body. So now you've got this dinosaur that's got better articulation than the figure that comes with it.
No, but it's not a bad figure. It's not great by any stretch, but for what it is, and the fact that, of course, these were created back in 2009, it's being, you know, finally released now, it's not really that bad.
So, Brad, what are you working on?
I've got a Hunter Prey version of Superman to go with the Doomsday I did a few weeks ago. I'm trying to wrap him up once I find the right cape for him. I'm working on Black Adam and Shazam, and I got one in the works. I won't reveal too much about him yet because he's not quite finished, but the little bio to go with them is going to be a Techno Viper's Day Off or Too Much Time on Your Hands. And you can kind of see how it pieces together there. But we'll just say it involves a bat and a Star Wars character, and we'll go there from there.
Actually, you brought up the Doomsday. You did a really cool thing with your Doomsday. Why don't you tell everybody who's listening the techniques you used to create that Doomsday?
Doomsday was one I wanted to make for such a long time, but finding the parts that worked real well for the figure just didn't happen. But then Rodimus VTS or Wartorius Customs, he has the kit for you. It has the back piece, the head, the arms, and some little attachments on the legs that you can use on one of the big bulk Marvel figures. So I went and did that, and then I ran across some stuff called Instamold. I'd seen a thing on YouTube about it where they almost look like little sticks of hot glue. You put them in hot water, which I use microwave a cup of water, and then you make a mold out of it. And then you can put your green stuff or Milliput or whatever into it and let it cure, and it pops right out real easy. You don't have to have any kind of mold release, and then paint it and go. It's still being played around with. I mean, I still haven't mastered everything. I've only tried to cast a couple things out of it. It's going to be a trial and error thing. I think it'd be good for somebody who wants to duplicate like landscaping or like armor. I don't think it's going to be something that people are going to use to make head casts or body parts down the line. But still, for like little details that you, instead of going out and buying a whole new figure, it's a quick and easy way to do it. And I'm going to try other types of material to see how it works with it, like Sculpey or Avies, once I'm able to find some, and see how that does with it.
Hey, Brad, is that the same stuff that we were talking? I can't remember, but it came in like little pellets, and you heat it up in the microwave, and then it becomes your mold thing, and then if you want to, you can reuse it by heating it up again. Are we talking about the same thing?
Well, we're talking about the same thread, but these actually come in sticks. It actually looks like a clear piece of gum that's a little bit thicker. And you put it in the hot water, let it melt down. You pull it out and do your make your mold, and then let it cool at room temperature, and then release it from whatever you're molding, and then put your sculpting material into it.
Have you tried to use that as the master mold as well as the molding material? So in other words, have you tried to make a mold out of it and then cast something inside it using that same stuff?
No, I haven't tried doing that. That's actually a pretty good idea. It's really flexible, though. I mean, so it's pretty easy to work with.
I'd be interested.
Right now, for casting, I use that, that casting clay, that blue clay. And if there's a one-off, I just need, like, a part of something or just a front imprint, I'll use that. But the problem is that when you actually mix resin in, the heat from the resin, when it kind of makes that chemical bond to create it, the clay attaches to it, even though it's like an oil-based clay and comes off. I still got to scrub it clean because the clay gets into it. So having that clear Instamold thing, man, that would cut out a lot of time just being able to do a quick one-off.
Because I was looking for the product I was talking about. Spectre, what I'm talking about is called Instamorph, a little tiny BB-sized thing that Brad is using called Instamorph.
Mine's Instamold, and it's they're like long, probably about 2-inch sticks. They look like about like the shape of a stick of gum.
I bet they're the same company.
Yeah, probably so.
Have you tried yours, Jeff?
Yeah, I tried to make a hiss tank driver head with mine, and I just wasn't happy with it. But I don't think I was using it as intended. I still haven't figured out the best way to do with this, or the best thing to do with it. It's goofy. I think it's meant for crafters, not like guys trying to get intricate detail out of it. It's for Pokemon. It's not for magic.
You and your trading card game references.
Oh, are you guys playing cards? All right. I'm done sculpting on this thing because it's just pissing me off. All I keep doing is tearing the little pieces I'm off. I'm trying to work on Madam Mask. Everybody should have a Madam Mask in their collection, and mine is just pissing me off.
The best thing to do, just put it down, go back to it later.
Yeah.
When you let the anger, leach out of you.
Agreed.
You should have listened to Brad.
Speaking of Brad, how many of you are going to the convention?
Not me, no money for it. I just bought a new refrigerator, and my wife just got a new car. Like, there's no money to go to the con.
Yeah, not going to make it this year. Well, what if I stop by and pick you up?
I actually just got new tires for the drive to con. Well, not just for the drive, but it definitely will help.
Are you driving? Really?
Yeah.
How far is that for you?
9 hours. No traffic.
Sweet.
I kind of can't tell you guys what I'm working on because it's for the convention. And it's not actually related to Joe Customs, so I can't talk about it. But I can tell you the topic. It's going to be Wizard of Oz related. So you're going to see something there that's kind of a neat project. And unfortunately, I'm not trying to goad anyone. I really can't talk about it because the big reveal is going to be at con. So you're going to see it then. And it's going to be awesome. But more importantly, Joe Customs is going to be there. We're going to have some customizing tutorials that we're going to be trying to cram into the schedule that they posted Friday and try to figure out some stuff. I know we're going to have some casting, some painting. Hindo Hustler said he's going to show us how to crack some torsos. So we'll have all that planned and coming up.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but Matt said he's doing the torso cracker, right?
Yep.
How is he going to do it?
I think he said he wanted to create one of the Richard Woodhouse wood blocks and show it that way. But also, because we're not sure if we're going to have a vise there or not. We'll try it a couple of different ways.
I can bring a vise. Does somebody know how to do it with a vise?
I use an X-Acto and a hammer. Bring it. We'll figure it out. We got a couple of days to play around with it.
All right, then.
When you guys have had to crack torsos, how do you do it?
I don't really crack them. I just have never had luck with it. I keep breaking them. So that's why most of the customs I use with have using Joe parts have the same upper arms and torso as the original figure.
I usually use the plier method with a little bit of foam on each tooth and catch it under one arm and then above on the shoulder of the other arm, and it works pretty good for most of them.
So just the squeezing pressure pops it open?
Yeah, on most of them. Some of the more awkward torsos, it doesn't work, and you have to go back to the old X-Acto to help it out a little bit. I use a hammer and a chisel. I don't take any prisoners, and I wind up with some big-ass scars. Here's my second question, follow-up question. So today I've been trying to make some customs using parts that I bought off the internet, including the bottom, the lower torsos that come split, that don't come with the T-bars or the connector between the two. So I had to break open a 25th figure to get the parts out to connect this custom together. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, Slayer Design had those. They have your own guts and whatnot they had to them. Yeah.
Right. So what's the best way to break the lower part open and try to keep it normal or try to salvage it?
From a caster or from the 25th?
From the 25th. So I need the guts out of the 25th to put in the cast piece. What's the best way to break that apart?
Don't do it. Go to Dollar Tree if you have one handy. Those, I think, I can't remember what the line was called, but they look like dreadnoughts for the bad guys and military guys were the good guys. They have the T-bar in there. You can unscrew it, and it has the T-bar right there for you.
They're okay. Called Stop versus Scum. They've been out of the stores for like 2 years or more. Yep.
You can still find them on rare occasion in some of them if you're lucky, but they have more of a plastic T-bar to them, so it's not going to be quite as sturdy as the metal, but it will work. I've used it on a couple times.
And what about the connection between the lower torso and the upper torso? The little ball with the disc on top.
That it doesn't have. But I'm sure if we can get a hold of one, we can probably get one cast and start making some for you.
Noted.
If it were me, I would just grab like one of those plethora of Cobra soldiers I have, you know, the original ones they came out with for the 25th line, and just Dremel the crap out of it and get all the bits and parts I needed from it. I'm lazy like that. I don't like to go around store hopping looking for parts.
Well, you could just get Mark M. to print enough for you. See, that's a callback to earlier in the show.
Yeah, it's smart.
Dude, in 2 years from now, we're going to be like, hey, send me the file for the T-bar, and we'll be printing them out in-house. I got a buddy, a friend, who has got this thing going on where they're actually printing with lasers and metal oxides or metal particles. So in other words, it's kind of like how they're printing with plastic, but instead what they're doing is ionizing these metal parts, and they're actually fabricating metal as if they were printing plastic.
And we'll the military said that for a long time. They have that on aircraft carriers. They make nuts and bolts and stuff like that instead of keeping them actually on hand.
All that stuff, that's going to be available to us within 5 years. Just saying. Calling it now, pointing out my home run right there.
Yep, I can see that. I can very easily see that.
Anyway, so yeah, we won't have to worry about T-bars after a couple more years. P-Love, where are we at in the show?
Joe Custom is going to have stuff at the con. Joe Michaels is going to have stuff, new stuff to show off. There's going to be a special project that's there. Alyosha and Raging Spoon, they're putting on an unofficial customizing class, that casting some parts. That's going on Thursday. I think it was like $20-$25 per person to help cover the cost of the room.
Do you know if they're going to have extra parts
from their thing that they're going to be selling afterwards? Because I heard they were making something special for this show.
Yeah, but you'll have to wait 6 to 8 weeks for it to arrive.
At the show, stuff is available. Unfortunately, Alyosha, you know, they can't sell that third-party stuff on the sales floor. But there is some room-to-room trading. So if you see any of those guys and you are interested in the products that they offer, you know, meet them after the show hours off the sales floor.
Speaking of room-to-room trading and after-hour sales, I might
know... No, you can't whore yourself out.
Or a couple of guys who did some White Mortal Chrome hat. Those would be for sale at the room-to-room trading. And if you're a Joe Customs member, you'll get a good price on them. If you're just a walk-up, it won't be a good price.
Who should they talk to if they're interested about that?
Talk to Joe Michaels, myself. You talk to Joe Czar, the big tall guy, or you talk to Hypno. All three of us went in and got a bunch of Snake Eyes heads chromed so that we can make up for what the club didn't do this year.
Oh, the club figure, the figure that didn't have the chrome head.
The White Mortal.
Also, Joe Custom is going to have our, you know, our annual business cards, but this year, not Picard had suggested it last year that we make, you know, the 3D bat image for the Real American Hero version of the figure. And so we went off, I went and checked, I talked with J-Man, he does some printing like that, so he couldn't actually do the 3D printing, but he helped me find some other people that could. And so we've got some 3D business cards. And the tutorials that we do put up, the ones that we do try, we're going to actually try to video record those somehow, well, with my camera, but try to get recordings of the tutorials and put those up on the site too. So it won't probably be con weekend, but over the following week, you'll probably see those go up too, of anything we actually do at the show.
Cool. Very cool, yeah.
All right. I know how much you guys like seeing that ship face last year. You know, the shipwreck custom that went around and met everybody.
Yep, yeah.
Anyway, I don't have shipwreck anymore. Ship face. P-Love has him.
He'll be there.
Since P-Love is driving by himself, it's going to be boring as hell. So I decided that this year our co-pilot will be Lance Sputnik, Sexy Gaucho. I hope you picked that up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a soundbite. You know she's a higher karate belt than you, right?
Thank you for noticing.
Well, Lance Sputnik will be coming with us.
Soundbite number two.
For today, right there. Did we have anything else we needed to talk about, or what's coming up? John, pull up the deadlines. What do we have to talk about? Isn't the pre-production?
Oh, yes. The Jody Classified Joe Customs Custom Contest. That's April 15th, coming right up around the corner. Some good prizes. Dremel, he hasn't been active on the board for a while, but he popped in, and he's going to be in there. He wants to do some vehicles, and he used to do some awesome vehicles. He actually didn't notice something, so I do want to point out, any custom that you enter needs to be submitted to the Joe Classified group. Like, you're going to send your physical custom to them. They're going to try to auction that off to help cover the cost of, you know, putting together their convention magazine and the cost of putting up, I think it's a double booth this year, which is three tables, so it should be even bigger than it was last year, filled with content and everything. Next to Hasbro, they're the next thing you should always be looking at when you go to the conventions, is the stuff they have from all their pre-production, all the collectible items. Like last year they had some Halloween masks, so anything that helps them helps the community at large.
Nice, well done. Also, NJC, when's it due?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, it's due April 29th. This one is the Swingin' 70s. I think the intent of this one is that you need to come up with a character that was invented in the 70s. It doesn't necessarily need to look like from the 70s, for instance, Buck Rogers, but due April 29th.
Yeah. And
I think that's all we got going on the site, isn't it?
Isn't there also the group project for the small playsets?
That's not due till June 23rd, but yeah, that just got voted for, Tim's idea, and he wants to harken back just to those original early 80s play sets we used to get, like the Cobra Battle Bunker, even the Flag, something that, you know, was a standalone piece that you could have like one or two figures working with it. It's a great idea. I'm really looking forward. Don't have a clue what I'm going to do for it, but it's something I'm looking forward to trying.
You say Flag or Flack?
Flack.
You say Flack.
F-L-A-K.
All right. Anything else we need to touch on?
Touch.
Don't touch my Flack. Don't touch yourself either. Not while on the radio. Well, I hope everybody's excited about the film opening.
You know, I spent $25 to go with all of the people at the convention to the G.I. Joe movie that night. And I'm not going to go see it before that. Anybody else want to say something?
I'm going to see it Wednesday.
I'm going next Saturday.
I'm
going
to see it at some point, probably after opening weekends, because several members of my family want to see it, too. We just got to do it. We can all have a time. We can all get together and do it.
Fair enough. Just saying. I'm not seeing it until I can see it with the rest of the freaks at the convention.
Yeah, a couple of the local guys here. I was talking to BCost74.
Wait, hold on. He lives... Wait, back up. BCost lives by you?
BCost lives, like, you know, 6 minutes from my house.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, actually, literally just missed him by about 5 minutes today at the Totoa Toys R Us. He was pulling in as I was leaving. I called him on the way home to tell him about the Jurassic Park Joe figures, and he's like, I'm here now. I'm like, oh, yeah, at the Totoa Toys R Us.
He's been trying to find some orcs and goblins, but can't find them anywhere.
Nah, he's not into the Hobbit stuff. He's a straight up Joe custom, Joe figures mostly.
He's a straight up Dragnaw.
Yeah, but I was talking to him and a couple other local guys. We've got this group called the Tri-State Vipers. It's New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut guys. And we're thinking of having some kind of...
The Tri-State Vipers are only second in coolness to the Great Lakes Vipers.
Yeah, but we're thinking of doing a group, trip to the theater to see it. Getting together like 20 guys or whatever.
That's always fun. Small groups, not a whole convention's worth, but small groups.
Yeah. Like, less than 24.
That's the way to do it. The one person I got to nail down while we're there is a zombie guide, so he can talk about all the stuff he couldn't talk about with the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Brad, did you want to say anything?
I think we pretty much covered everything.
Ask John who he's going to be sleeping with at the convention.
I will be with the Great Lakes Dreadnought sleeping on the floor with my Darth Vader machine. Jeff. It'll be great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. It's a very exciting time to be a Joe fan right now. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I think Joe may end up with some kind of almost like a renaissance right now, because I think the movie is going to entice a lot of people in a way that Rise of Cobra didn't, that we may end up with a lot of new Joe fans. Early, press from screenings has been quite positive.
You know, I'm going to say something that's going to get me struck down by lightning. By all the Joe fans. But this Mike Costa comic that's coming out of IDW is my favorite G.I. Joe comic ever. And I've met Larry and everything else, but I think this is my favorite G.I. Joe run of comics, period.
The one with hashtag? The one that just relaunched?
It just relaunched? I don't know. I only collect the trades, so I don't know that
happen. Okay. A couple of months ago, they relaunched and did, like, where G.I. Joe became... Spoiler. Where they became a publicly known. So there's this public group that, these key characters, I think Duke, Snake Eyes, and a new character, Hashtag, which was supposed to be the social media presence, kind of like... tweet live tweeting or something, all their actions. But meanwhile, there's actually covert teams in different G.I. Joe comics that are doing the usual, black ops that you typically expect of them.
Yeah, what could Hashtag possibly be tweeting? Getting shot at by Cobra, they can't hit shot. What is he saying?
No comment.
That's in the coaster run? Because... that sounds lame.
Yeah, I can't remember who's actually writing that, but I thought it was.
Well, he's only reading the trades. I don't think there's a trade of that series out yet, because it just started. He may be thinking of the past series that just finished.
Yeah. Mike Costa's run on Cobra and all those other ones, those were everyone liked those, as far as I know. I didn't know anybody who hated them at all.
All right.
Sorry to burst your bubble. You're like, you know what I really like? that thing that's about to end. I feel like I just told you Santa Claus isn't real.
What?
All right.
Hey, man. Do we have anything more that we want to put on the podcast? I mean, this is the pre-con thing. You think they're going to do FFSS number 2? You think they're going to show us them all?
You know, they've had so much on their plate. I'd be surprised if we saw the actual figures on display there. I think we'll know
the control art or like photos.
Right. I think we'll know the lineup, and I think they'll give some mock-ups, electric mock-ups, but I don't think they'll have the actual figures, you know, production-level figures to show people.
I disagree. I bet they've got them all done already.
I mean, they did have time. It's just, I don't know. Between the second run of the convention, only 8 months between conventions, the Transformer convention, that's a lot.
Well, there's a very good possibility. If they already had the lineup, they may have made the prototypes at the same time as they did the prototypes with Wave 1, and then, you know, to split it instead of having, you know, initially, maybe they did the prototypes, or at least, like, the electronic prototypes of maybe 26 figures. Maybe they thought they were going to do 26 figures and then split into 2 13s, one each year. The club tends to think ahead, even though, like, I honestly don't think they put as much thought into some of the things as they should, but it seems like they always have stuff ready ahead of the time, at least as far as the concept of it. So it's very possible that the 13 from, you know, the subscription series 2 may already be finalized. They may already have the parts picked out and the color schemes picked out. We don't know how far in advance, because they may also be picking up a lot of the unproduced Hasbro stuff, like how they turned the IG set into part of the concept for last year. They already said one of the figures is Night Force Falcon, and he was supposed to come out in, I think it was like the last wave of 25th before it became Rise of Cobra.
Right.
So there's a very good chance they may already have this stuff finalized.
Good point.
Because I doubt that any of the figures that they chose for their subscription service were their designs. They seem way too much like something that Hasbro already had in the pike somewhere.
Speaking of that, I could definitely see some of those concept figures being flipped around and used for the FSS Psych Out. You know, I could see a, you know, Dayglow green version of them coming out.
Yeah, as part of the FSS. They're doing Night Force. They can just do traditional colors. And they already got, you know, a bunch of the figures right there.
Good point.
And as far as Hasbro, I couldn't tell you. It depends on... I think we'll see maybe some more movie-related items, but I'm really curious where they go after that, because there have been no hints as what's coming out after Retaliation.
How much you want to bet some of those concept case figures, like Hit and Run and that Ultimate Flint?
I hope so.
How much you want to bet that comes back to life?
I know it won't be the Renegades Coyote, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was never tooled up, from what I understand. I mean, I'm personally hoping for all those zombie figures they had shown off, but yeah, we know the tooling existed, at least for the zombie Cobra Commander, because from the neck down, he's that ultimate Cobra Commander in Retaliation Wave 4 or whatever it is.
Right.
And most of those figures just used kitbash parts anyway. Also, I think they probably would release, even if they just continue the Retaliation line a little bit, some of the vehicle drivers had fully articulated versions. The Cobra Commander that came with the Hiss Tank was the Track Viper. We saw it at the bottom of the concept case.
Right.
And the Swamp Viper, or whatever his name was, that came with the boat, that's basically the Pursuit of Cobra clutch with a different head. So that those figures may come out in their fully articulated forms, because Hasbro also said they wanted to get those characters out again as actual action figures, not 5 POA drivers.
Every time somebody says POA, I hear POS.
But I can see that Hasbro probably has a lot more up their sleeves that we don't know about yet, because when they axed Pursuit of Cobra to start making room for Retaliation, there was a lot more stuff that they had hinted at some point or another that was in production somewhere, like Quinn and the Data Viper and everything else, which is, you know, going to start trickling out now. So I bet you Hasbro probably has another 24 figures up their sleeves that are basically ready to go. And I think they're just waiting on the numbers for the Retaliation toys before going ahead with them.
I hope so. All right. If that's it, say goodnight.
I got nothing else.
Yeah. Okay.
Once again, the world is a safe place to be, thanks to the G.I. Joe team of experts. G.I. Joe, a real American hero.